please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi min ash-shaytan ar-rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program Bridge. We are looking at the supplications of Al-Imam Ali ibn Husayn Zain al-Abidin salamullah alayhi. And we are still looking at the first verse, and we're looking at the first word, which is hirs. A human being, in his nature, is created to love and seek perfection. The only problem is that sometimes, as human beings, we seek perfection, and we love things that, in fact, it leads to our destruction, not to our perfection. So we get attracted, and this gravity pulls us towards these things that takes us from the natural order of things to the extreme order of things. For example, we love to have wealth. Everyone does. We love to have money. That's sure. But sometimes if I think this is where my perfection lies, this is where I become who I am, then that's a dangerous place to be. Then that is what we call hirs. So a human being, as a human being, we can easily make the mistakes when it comes to knowing or trying to find out what brings us to perfection and to the things that we want and the things that we seek. So we think it's a shortcoming. I think there's something wrong with me if I don't seek these things. So Allah in the Quran, when He says, "Inna al-insana khuliqa halu'a," it's like he was created with this sense of, he has less patience. He just wants to get things done very quickly. And that's, he says, that's a problem. So one has to understand that the idea is you need to seek your perfection in the things that are, in fact, lead you to your perfection, not to the things that you think will lead you to your perfection. So hirs itself will always drive a person to the brink of destruction if he puts his ideas and his mentality in the wrong place. Let's take a short break and then we continue, inshallah.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana,
welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. So human beings, as we said, we must have our goals and our priorities set correctly. Because a person that thinks his aim and his goal in life is to seek money and wealth, obviously he's under the trap or in the trap of greed. But when a person puts his trust in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and connects to him, then his mental state changes, his happiness, his perfection comes in that regard. That's why we see Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, أَلَا بِذِكْرِ اللَّهِ تَطْمَئِنُّ الْقُلُوبِ. Surely with the remembrance of Allah, the hearts are content. My heart is not going to be content from me having a big house, or me having a big car, or me having a beautiful spouse, or many children. These things are considered to be naqs, like a shortcoming, not a perfection. The only perfection a person could get is when it comes to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. From here, Al-Imam Al-Baqir salamullah alayhi in a hadith, he says, La hirsa kal-munafasati fi darajat. There is no greed like trying to compete with other people by seeking deeds, by seeking levels of heaven. Heaven itself is a trophy. Heaven is a reward, is how much you put, how much you get. So if I want to be greedy of trying to get as much or more of anything, in fact, it should be heaven. It shouldn't be this dunya, because this world, whatever is in it, it will finished, it will go. You will leave it behind. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave us classic examples from Qarun and upwards, right? Those people who had more money than anyone could even imagine. Qarun himself, only the key to his treasury required 40 people to carry, yet alone the treasury itself. But where's Qarun and where's his wealth? And all these rich people that we have in this world, once they die, are they going to take their bank accounts with them? Of course not. It will all remain here. The only thing a person can take with him to the afterlife is how much he worked for the afterlife itself. So the perfection lies in how much we connect to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Let us take a break and then we come back, inshallah.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge, coming to you from IRIB English Radio. If a person is driven and motivated by this world itself, that will literally result into a greed. Imam Ali alayhi salam says in a hadith, إِنَّ الدُّنْيَا مَجْغَلَةٌ عَنْ غَيْرِهَا. This world will distract you from things beside it. وَلَمْ يُسَبْ صَاحِبُهَا مِنْهَا شَيْئًا. And whatever that person who lives in this world, whatever he gains from it, he says, إِلَّا فَتَحَتْ لَهُ حِرْصًا عَلَيْهَا. In fact, it will open a gate of a greed towards it. So if a person moves towards wealth, the doors of wealth will open to him and he will become greedy in this regard. When he moves towards, for example, collecting and gathering material possessions, then a door will be opened. So each one of us, if we look into ourselves, we see that we have a greed in some field of life. Because there has to be something that I and you love so much that we are so attached to and want to have much of. And so this is where hirs comes from. Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhi also says in a hadith, مَثَلُ الْحَرِيصُ عَلَى الدُّنْيَا. He says, the one who has greed over the dunya, over this world, كَمَثَلِي دُودَةِ الْقَزْ. He is like the silkworm. And with the silkworm, as you know, it wraps itself with silk until it kills itself. And he says, كُلَّمَا ازْدَرْتْ مِنَ الْقَزْ عَلَى نَفْسِهَا. The more that warm, that silk moth wraps itself with silk, the more it dies out of, the Imam says, it dies out of, the word he uses is gham, matat hatta tamutu ghamma, until it dies out of depression, because now it's trapped, it can't get out of it. Same thing with me and you. God forbid if we put ourselves in this state of mind where we will become greedy over this world, greedy over trying to have position, greedy over materialistic life. We keep wrapping ourselves in it. It puts us in this state of depression. And then, God forbid, to lead to our demise, and then the afterlife, obviously, the result is known. Inshallah, we will continue this in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
Sometimes someone's name is exactly what it should be, like Ruhullah or God's soul. Many people ask, did he know what he brought to the country as a souvenir? But his lovers remind them that he was Ruhullah. During the several years after he came down the airplane stairs, he was here to finish what was left unfinished for the past 70 or more years. He said there would come a day when children in cradles will accompany him. And when they attacked Khomeini's Iran from air, land, sea, with everything they had, it was the children in the cradle's turn who had now become strong young men to stand up with names that were like themselves or even their family names, like Hossein, like Badpa, meaning as swift as the wind.
In memory of Hossein Badpa.
When someone talks about a martyr, it is not strange to hear familiar descriptions. They might sometimes even sound cliché. For example, imagine that you want to talk about courage, kindness, faith, and good manners of a martyr, as they all had these characteristics. They were some people who were like each other, even in their names. Mahdi, Muhammad, Ali, Hassan, Hussein, Ibrahim, and Qasim. What difference does it make what their names in their birth certificate is, or where they are from? If you can show a martyr who can easily be found among all other martyrs, it means he had something that would make him stand out. It's something hard to do. Here, social, family, or occupational status will not work on its own. You have to look for something else. War is not easy, especially in a battlefield like the 8-year defense. Putting aside the hardships during the war, there are risks as well. Being wounded, captured, or killed. But despite all this, there are things in the battlefield that not many people can do. It means there are some people among the fighters who choose to do the harder things, like the guys in the Operation Intelligence Unit. But there were many times that the fighters would have to remain in the enemy's territory to get the necessary information from the enemy's roads, forces, and facilities. So, undoubtedly, you can say that if Hossein Badpa is supposed to be in the war, he has to remain in the Operation Intelligence Unit. In the Operation Intelligence Unit of the Sarallah 41st Division, there are still lots of tough things that not everyone can do. And it means, if what we know about Badpa is true, he has to shoulder doing this tough task as well. But what's the toughest thing to do? Giving up your life in the path of God? This was what all fighters wished for. Getting wounded? That's also sweet. What is more honorable than having a mark on your body until hereafter that makes you keep your head high up among those who stand up for our religion? It's obvious that getting separated from the comrades who have been martyred is hard. But you can pin your hopes on this verse from the Holy Quran. Among the believers, there are those who have remained true to their covenant they made with Allah. Then what? What is the hardest thing to do that the hero in our story has to shoulder? That's it. You won't become a martyr. For someone like Hussein, it was a huge disappointment. Just think about it. Your injuries from the war affect 70% of your body, and you ask yourself all the time if you deserve to be martyred or not. And it's only about you. Someone among the people, most of whom have reached a destination and the rest have not lost hope that they will become martyrs. Yet, this is the hardest thing to do. Finding yourself in the raucous world, especially when your comrades are not with you, is the hardest thing to do. That's exactly what the guys in the Operation Intelligence Unit do, all alone among the enemy forces. That's why, when the war ended and after he accomplished his mission in the IRGC, he decided to start anew. Maybe he thought he had come the wrong way. Or maybe, by creating jobs and helping people put food on the table, he was on a soul-searching mission. Time is like the wind that blows. It both exists and does not. When it exists, the memories and experiences are also there, but when it does not, it means that you've spent your life. But if all of these lead to the right decision, why would you worry that your hair is becoming gray? It's the choice everyone can make only once in their lives, the hard time of going or staying. Like Ashura, like choosing those whose beard had grown gray for the plain of Karbala, like Habib. The passion to defend the shrine of Ahl al-Bayt is not something new for Shias. They are born to die for Ali and his children. They are alive to only shout out loud that they love Imam Hussein, so they draw the attention of the people all across the world to Karbala. After Syria became like this, the passion to defend the shrine of Ahl al-Bayt grew in many people's hearts. But those who were from Kerman were a different story. Now, the standard bearer of defending the holy shrine in the world of Islam was their former commander. That was why their honor wouldn't allow them to leave him alone in the new battlefield. For example, someone like Haj Hussein. Qasem Soleimani was not only a commander for him. What could he do? He knew that Haj Qasem loved him, but he was strict about deploying veterans to the new battlefield. But he was worried that Haj Qasem might still remember what martyr Qasemi had said. You won't become a martyr. He always felt the weight of these words. They had come down on Haj Hussein like a ton of bricks, and no one showed up to rescue him. When the martyrs of the defense of the holy shrine came back to Iran one by one, Hussein felt the agony again. But when Muhammad Jamali got martyred, he could not bear it. He insisted, but General Soleimani did not agree. He came up with a plan. He took his wife to Haj Qasem. He asked her to intervene. He was right. No matter how determined Qasem Soleimani as a commander was, when it comes to a faithful woman, he gives it a second thought. You know, for Shias, Chador is a different story. That was how Hossein Badpa managed to go to Syria. But later on, when he got disappointed again that he did not get martyred, again it was General Soleimani who told him a secret. So Hussein stayed and embraced what he was looking for. War in Syria takes its own man. Being courageous and experienced is not enough. If you want to be even an ordinary sniper, you need to be someone special, let alone being a commander. Despite all this, Hussein Badpa was a person who easily stood out in Syria, much easier than in our own battlefields. Hussein shone among the defenders of the shrine and was special for everyone in a different way. But Hussein himself was still reeling under those old words. What could he do? He went to Haj Qasim. Haj Qasim suggested that he implore Martyr Qazami's mother. She's a mother, after all. If she prays, Muhammad Reza Qazami will intercede and he will be rescued from the weight of that prediction. It was the better guidance. He knew Martyr Qazami's family from a long time ago, but now things were different. He did not know if Muhammad Reza's mother will agree to do what he wanted. He felt confident about Muhammad Reza's mother. But that day, when Mustafa Sadrzadeh was in front of our camera, he did not know that his turn for the glorious moment of martyrdom will arrive soon. What he talked about might be the same peace Hussein Badpa was looking for. The strange feeling of doubt about whether he'll be accepted or not. Hussein Badpa, a war veteran whose injuries affected 70% of his body. He was martyred in Dar'a on April the 20th, 2015. After Hussein Badpa got martyred, his body was not retrieved. He said he knew that Haj Qasim would put the veterans' bodies in their graves, so he did not want General Soleimani to be filled with sadness in his burial. That's why all of the bodies returned, except for his. The only thing was that his family missed him. His wife, Muhammad, Fatima, and his youngest son, Ehsan, who was impatient to see his father. Maybe what he promised his wife made them feel calm. He said, "After I die, you'll get to meet the leader."
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the book, The Inner Voice, Allama Sayyid Said Akhtar Rizvi aptly explains the need for a man to understand his purpose in life and to be able to ponder over some of the important aspects of our journey in reaching nearness to Allah. Today, we will read to you an excerpt of this book. Stay with us. Aim of life. And did you think that we created you aimlessly? Quran, chapter 23, verse 15. No man likes to be accused of working aimlessly. Acting without purpose is against the accepted norms of sanity. Therefore, we are confident that God never does any work without aim and purpose. And what is the purpose of our creation, our life? A group thinks that material well-being is the sole purpose of the human life. Their creed, every man should work according to his ability and he should get according to his need, it is the ultimate goal of their life. They see no other purpose beyond it. Alas, these people do not know the difference between means of life and aim of life. Let me explain it. A farmer grows maize. He cultivates the land, mixes fertilizer in the earth, sows the seed, irrigates the shamba when necessary. Go and ask him, what is the purpose of cultivation? He will never say, the purpose of the cultivation is to sprinkle fertilizer and irrigate the land. He has sense enough to know that these are the means of cultivation, not its aim. Its aim is to produce maize for human consumption. A dairy man keeps cows. He feeds them, looks after them, and protects them from harm. Ask him, and he will explain that these are the means of keeping the cows alive. But is it the purpose of keeping the cows in the farm? No, the purpose is something else. Milk. So we see that even in the worlds of maize and cows, the difference between the means of life and purpose of life is fully recognized. Is it not strange to forget it when it comes to the human life? When a philosophy teaches us that bread and butter are the aim of life, it ceases to be a philosophy. It becomes a fallacy. In fact, we are alive for a higher purpose and nobler aim. The Creator Himself has made it clear. And I did not create jinn and human beings, but so that they may know and obey me. Quran, chapter 51, verse 56. Forget this basic purpose of your creation, and you have degraded yourself to a level far below than that of a cow and maize. Thank you so much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was an excerpt from the book Inner Voice by Allama Sayyid Said Akhtar Rizvi. Our website is parstoday.com. Until next time, we leave you in Allah's care.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Said Hakim was amongst the Maraja that was standing against the oppression in Iraq especially. Of course, his activities was not limited only to Iraq. He was worrying about Shia community all over the world.
When we study his lifestyle, we see he was really capable of teaching advanced level. Why? Because he was given this chance to revise the book of Mustamsak al-Urwat al-Wuthqa. By whom? By the Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim.
Be more familiar with outstanding Shia figures in the teacher.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is The Teacher, an introduction into the lives and works of the most outstanding Muslim thinkers, philosophers, and jurists, especially the Shiite ones, all across the Nation of Islam. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Mahdavi and Sheikh Ziyaniya. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh Mahdavi, and welcome to your show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Ziyaniya, assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
So for today's discussion, let's continue it on the scholarly life of Sayyid Muhammad Sa'id al-Hakim, one of the greatest Maraja in the country Iraq and the Shiite world. On September 3rd, 2021, we missed this outstanding man, this outstanding Shia Marja, among the most outstanding students of Sayyid al-Khoi. Let's get to the scholar life of this man, Sheikh Ziyaniya. What details can you give us about him?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Sa'id al-Hakim was amongst the first figures that we mentioned regarding the scholarship in Fiqh and Usul in Iraq.
Yes.
He was amongst the students of late Marhum Khoui,
yes,
Rahmatullah alayh. And after the demise of late Marhum Khoui, the position of Marja'iyat was mentioned for Marhum Sayyid Muhammad Sa'id al-Hakim. And you know, maybe it's interesting for us that some of his books was produced in prison. No, while he was in prison, he decided to compile and write some books. Of course, he didn't have access to, you know, to the sources and to the resources. So he just, relying on his mind, decided to write some books. That amongst this book is Al-Muhkam fi Usul al-Fiqh. Of course, he completed this book after coming out from prison. That's but right. The idea of the writing this book and some other books came to his mind while he was in prison for 8 years.
8 years by Saddam Hussein Abbas regime.
Yes. Okay. You know, Saddam Hussein, the chief of the Ba'ath regime of the time of Iraq, decided to hold a seminar and invited all the scholars in Iraq, amongst which was Sayyid Muhammad Sayyid al-Hakim, rahmatullah alayh, and he didn't participate in that seminar.
Yes. As even a sign of opposition to Saddam Hussein.
Yes, yes,
okay.
Yes. They threatened him.
Yes.
And they said that if you do not participate, we will put problems on your way. But he insisted on not participating in that, you know, gathering.
Yes.
And the gathering was to give mashru'iyat and legitimacy to the government of Saddam.
Yes.
That's why he didn't participate in that program. And, you know, he was to back the government of Iran that on those time yes. was the, you know, government that was defending Shia school yes. of thought against the Ba'ath regime.
Yes.
So Ayatollah Hakim was amongst the four main scholars in Najaf that when you want to mention the great scholars of Najaf, one of them is Sayyid al-Sistani, Hafadahullah.
Yes.
Ayatollah Bashir al-Najafi and Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Sa'id al-Hakim. These are the great figures here.
Yes.
So one of the most important points regarding his personality that is based on the, you know, scholarship personage
yes.
is that Ayatollah Hakim was one of the defenders of muqavamat,
mm-hmm.
defensive of Shiites in Iraq.
Yes.
You know, if a prominent scholar stands for the people who are fighting against oppression, this is completely different with the situation that someone who is not a prominent one, he is just talking about the issue and yes. no one listens to him.
No practical
yes.
yeah, no encounter.
For example, after the attack of ISIS, we all yes. are aware of the famous fatwa of Sayyid Sistani Hafadahullah
yes.
regarding jihad.
Yes.
And Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Sa'id al-Hakim was amongst those scholars who backed this
yes.
fatwa.
Very good.
And they said that we all back Sayyid Sistani and
yes.
we are defending those people who participate in this, you know, al-Hashd al-Sha'bi and stand against the
yes.
ISIS in the
That's
battle.
All right. Thank you very much. Truly a practical marja who is concerned with all the socio-political and religious affairs of the society. And this is what the, we can say, the Muslim community and the Shia community expect from the Maraja, you know, to be active in the society and to be concerned with the affairs of the people. Alhamdulillah, this is so in the Islamic seminaries of Qom, Najaf, Mashhad, and Karbala. And we could see the students, you know, and the next generation of this Maraja and their roles in nurturing the students and the people. Let's get to the other works of Sayyid al-Hakim, Sheikh Mahtabi. Can you name some of them for us?
Yes, sir. A lot of works, more than 24 titles have been authored by late Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Sayyid al-Hakim. And this is because of his talent in the fiqh and usul. This is mentioned that when he was 32, he reached the level that he was teaching advanced level of fiqh usul, which is called Dars-e Kharij Fiqh Usul. And we know that not every talibe can be qualified of this level to teach such advanced level of fiqh usul when he is 32 years old.
You said kharij, what is kharij?
Advanced level of...
No, what is this term kharij?
Kharij means that they are not taking one book and start teaching from one book.
Okay.
They are putting one, actually they are focusing on one subject and then they are trying to have a comprehensive discussion over that subject based on different books and different ulamas.
So this is out
of
the ordinary, classified routine.
Yes.
Is it?
Textbooks.
So according to the personal reasoning, they have to deduct something, okay?
Yeah.
But that's why it is called kharej, which means out.
Yeah, actually okay. They are...
Or outside of something. Yeah, okay.
They have reached a level that they themselves can extract the ruling.
The ruling,
they do
that's
not
right.
follow one single book.
Okay.
Whatever he says
okay.
Pertaining the subjects, they follow it. No. So. And they teach the students. No. They give their focus on the subject and
yes.
then trying different
yes.
views over that thing.
So this kharaj here means does not mean foreign.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Okay.
Or overseas.
Overseas.
It has nothing
right.
to do with overseas.
Okay, that's right.
When we study his lifestyle, we see he was really capable of teaching advanced level. Why? Because he was given this chance to revise the book of Mustamsak al-Urwat al-Wuthqa. By whom? By the Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not because of being relative to Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim to be given this position, because we all are aware of the great students of Sayyid Muhsin al-Hakim.
That's right.
So among all students, this is the only personality who is given this chance to revise Mustamsak al-Urwa that we know of the place of this book among the library of Shia Fiqh.
That's all right.
Among his other works, we have to mention a voluminous book in Usul al-Fiqh, 6 volumes.
Yes.
Which is called Al-Muhkam fi Usul al-Fiqh, another book that our dear brother mentioned that he actually authored this book when he was in the prison, mm-hmm. is another book with respect to the subject of Usul, Al-Kafi fi Usul al-Fiqh, and his commentary on Minhaj al-Salihin, 19 volumes.
Okay.
And besides teaching Usul al-Fiqh and Fiqh, we see that he also is teaching Tafsir al-Quran,
oh.
and also he is known of teaching
That's
Akhlaq.
Right. Okay. Sheikh Ziyaniya, we have Fiqh and we have Usul. What is Usul al-Fiqh? I mean, is this the combination of the two or no? It's a separate discussion.
We may say that these two are completing each other, especially Usul al-Fiqh. Usul al-Fiqh are al-Qawa'id and Usul that
yes.
are implemented in Fiqh to deduce and to find the rulings and fatwa. For example, you need to find fatwa and the hukm regarding the issue of, for example, riba, usury.
Yes.
You need to refer to rivayat
yes.
and ayat, the verses of Quran and ahadith. But how to refer to these texts?
Oh.
Here, usul al-fiqh that are the rules and basis and qawa'id for this referring are helpful and will assist you to derive out the fatwa from the original texts.
That's all right. Sayyid al-Hakim was a famous... we can't say scholar in this field, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
And he had good students regarding
oh.
this. You know, being a good teacher
yes.
will give good students also.
Yes.
So one of the very prominent students of Sayyid Muhammad Sayyid al-Hakim is Sheikh Muhammad Baqir al-Irawani.
Yes.
That was a prominent scholar in Qom, and now he left to Iraq and he is now living in Najaf.
Yes.
And his, teaching nowadays in Najaf is one of the most famous ones.
I mean, I've heard that it's been welcomed by so many seminary students. And
yes.
I mean, number of the people participate in his classes.
Yes.
Yes.
And, this scholar, Sheikh Muhammad Baqir al-Irawani, has compiled and, has authored some, great books regarding
yes.
Usul al-Fiqh and al-Fiqh.
I think he needs one separate program
yes,
in
yes,
the
yes.
teacher. We have to get into the
so
new generation.
So he is one of the
yes.
students of Sayyid Muhammad Sayyid al-Hakim. And another student of him is Hussein Faraj Imran al-Qatifi that
yes.
was from Hijaz. And he is a prominent scholar nowadays there. And another one is Sayyid Abdul Razak al-Hakim that was his brother.
Yes.
And unfortunately, he passed away
yes.
after some years, that he was released from the prison of Saddam. He, passed away in a doubtful way. So, and I also should mention this, that there is a software made by Noor Software Organization in Iran, in Qom.
Yes.
That have compiled all the, works of late Ayatollah
yes.
Hakim. You know, 38 titles in 65 volumes are gathered in this software.
Yes.
And the subjects of the books are fiqh, usul al-fiqh, al-aqa'id, and the Islamic teachings.
That's all right.
So if people want to refer to this software, they may get benefit from it.
And the works of also other scholars, whole Islamic worlds, this Nur, we can say, center, the Computer Nur Center placed in Qul, the city of Qom, is really doing a great work.
Yes.
On making, you know, all these books into the software, and, you know, especially for researchers all across the world of Islam, it made it very much easy in order to reach the outstanding resources of the Muslim and the Shiite worlds. Also, his fatwa regarding the new problems of the modern world, like cloning, like cyberspace and computers, were famous. I mean, Sayyid al-Hakim's fatwas.
He was amongst those scholars that was worried regarding new, you know, and modern issues.
Yes.
And give some fatwa regarding these issues. And, of course, some of his fatwa was, you know, novel and unique.
Yes.
But we should refer to the, you know, reason that he is giving.
Yes.
And this is a norm in Hawza that if a person is giving new ideas, there must also give a new reasons for it.
That's
right. Just not accept fatwa, you know, in Darsul Kharij, in, and, you know, in high level, you know, studies. So, but yeah, he was involved in modern issues regarding cloning, as you mentioned, regarding some issues regarding fiqh al-mughtaribin, that means
which is what
fiqh for people who are living in Western countries.
Fiqh
al-mughtaribin.
Mughtaribin. That's
So that's
the fiqh, which is for the people and the Muslims or the Shiites living in the Western world.
Yes.
Which have so many problems, you know, have so many doubts and questions.
Yeah. In other words, Shia or Muslim people who are living in non-Muslim countries.
Non-Muslim lands, that's right.
So they have, you know, their own problems, they have their own issues. So
Sayyid
Muhammad Sa'id al-Hakim was a person who was thinking about them. And
that's right.
Why
very
we are
good.
Saying that he was a practical, you know, a marja of practice.
That's all right.
So he was worried regarding them and, you know, wrote a book regarding these issues and
very good.
Mentioned his fatwa in that book.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Ziaynian, Sheikh Mahdavi. On September 3rd, 2021, just recently, you know, this outstanding marja, Shiite marja in Iraq, passed away. He was taken into the city of Najaf and was buried in vicinity of the tomb of Imam Ali alayhi salam in the whole city of Najaf. May Allah bless his soul and may Allah protect all the generation of Maraja in the city of Iraq, especially Sayyid al-Sistani, over there in Iraq, you know, the true protector of the Shia Islam over there. Thank you, my Sheikh Ziaynian, Sheikh Mahdavi, for presence in the program, The Teacher.
You're most welcome,
brother. Dear listeners, thank you very much, too, for listening to us. This is The Teacher. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Visit our website at parstoday.com/yen, Call of Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode and introducing another Shiite dignitary to you. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The light.
Hot air balloons were invented in the 18th century, enabling man to finally fulfill his dream of flying. After more than 200 years, people are still eager to ride the colorful vehicles. Some even use them competitively. In the German hot air ballooning championships, balloonists will fly over the skies of the green Bavarian town of Tegernsee. 25 of Germany's best pilots are vying for first place. The organizers of the event expect a tight race, as the contestants have all managed to pass the previous competitions with flying colors to qualify for the national championship.
zoo in northeast France has an adorable new inhabitant, a white baby rhinoceros. The cute little male rhino was born on the 6th of October. The zoo staff have given him the name of Mole. He was able to withstand less than 2 hours after being born. Mole soon started feeding from his gentle 21-year-old mother called Tala. Mole is Tala's third baby.
Children and young adults have once again come back to cinema as Iran is hosting the 34th edition of the International Film Festival for Children and Youth. Salman Kujuri has a story.
The 34th edition of the International Film Festival for Children and Youth is underway in Iran with around 600 films from 32 countries having entered the contest. The motto of this year's festival is Cinema, the Land of Imagination. In the national section, some 440 films from Iranian movie makers have been submitted to the secretariat of the festival, including 248 short, 119 short animated, 30 feature-length and 14 feature films, 12 web series, and also 19 Korean narrations.
This edition of the festival can be considered as a festival of cinema products for the most important generation of the next century, a generation that must redefine the country in the new world and protects its power, culture, pride, and identity. Although the tragedy of the pandemic is terrible, at least it assures us that the next generation from an early age has experienced and learned to deal with difficult circumstances and pay due attention to the importance of cooperation and teamwork in the face of major crises.
The foreign films include 32 animated and 30 feature-length movies from 32 countries, as well as 56 short movies, including 21 short animated and 35 short feature films. The movies have been screened in two cities, Tehran and Isfahan, both in an online format and in theaters in compliance with the health protocols.
I've narrated a couple of films at this festival, and I love to watch children's films. I love comedy. I watched a number of movies at this festival, and they've been good.
This year, I have taken part in this edition of the festival with a film for which my colleagues and I have tried so hard to produce. I care about the children of my country because they are future makers of this land. I hope children will like my movie.
Such platforms as Hashur, Tiva, and Filima have displayed the films, and the online audience can watch the works on these three online platforms.
Children's movies are an excellent way to educate them. They can be very useful to teach them history, show them different cultures, accustom them to fundamental values, and show them how to think, all in a simple and entertaining way. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
The Greek Postal Service has come up with an innovative idea to speed up the mail sorting process, not by humans, but a fleet of robots. 55 tiny yellow robots, powered by artificial intelligence, are helping employees in Hellenic Post Sorting Center. They scan postal codes to identify the bundle's destination, weigh the parcels, and put them in related platforms. The program aims to handle increasing number of packages from online shopping, especially during the pandemic.
The end result is a threefold increase in sorting speed of parcels, ensuring next day delivery for our customers. These autonomous mobile robots are energy efficient, thus directly reducing the energy consumption of the sorting process, and that way allowing us to take a greener approach to operations.
According to the company, up to 80% of mail sorting has been passed to the four-wheeled robots. Each day, these little machines manage around 168,000 packages weighing up to 15 kilograms. Every 4 hours, they need recharging, which takes 5 minutes.
Now, an underwater museum in Turkey is offering a unique opportunity to its visitors. diving back in time. The World War I era naval battle site turned into an underwater park on Turkey's Gallipoli Peninsula, and it has recently opened its doors to the public. The area is known as the graveyard of navies and includes dozens of shipwrecks from battles dating back to the early 20th century.
One of the most exciting things about diving is shipwrecks, of course. They remind you of the past, and it's like a time machine that takes you back to 1915.
The British Royal Battleship HMS Majestic is one of the first ships that divers see as they start their underwater journey. The vessel sank during the First World War and rests more than 24 meters below the ocean's surface, but it still remains intact. Remains of 14 British, French, and Australian warships are over there. Museum officials say they want the site to become a new hub for divers who wish to explore historical events.
Russia has sent an actress and a director to space to make the world's first movie in orbit. The crew blasted off from Kazakhstan for the International Space Station along with a cosmonaut and successfully reached the orbit. They spent 4 months on preparation for the flight. After 12 days in space, they will return to Earth. The movie, named Challenge, is about a doctor who goes to the space station to treat an astronaut with a heart ailment. Russian officials say the project will help burnish the nation's space glory.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Australian scientists have developed artificial structures that act as a much-needed habitat for marine life.
It's extremely exciting because we have seen a total of more than 90 species colonizing these diverse panels. And we see 30 to 40% more species on the panels in the living seawalls than on the unmodified parts of the seawall, so the seawalls with no panels. So that's extremely exciting and really gives us confidence to scale this up to other environments and other artificial structures.
The project has installed over 1,000 artificially designed panels onto seawalls in Sydney. These craggy concrete panels are 3D printed and designed to last for at least 20 years. Only a short time after installation, they turned into a cozy new home for the fish, crustaceans, and other marine life.
So we have more fish in Sydney Harbour than we have in the entire UK coast. So we have more than 500 species of fish in the harbour, so that's quite impressive. But what we notice is that urbanization and the human settling, especially towards the coast, has a lot of impacts on this amazing marine environment, and that's what we are trying to mitigate a bit with the living seawalls by attaching these panels that mimic natural features such as rocky shores and rock pools and crevices and nooks and crannies.
After becoming popular in Australia, the panels were also installed in Wales and Singapore. The scientists say since the installation of these panels, the quality of Sydney's harbour water has improved. They hope coastal structures built in the future would be ecologically sustainable, designed not only for humans, but for nature.